Today we're going to be in James, the third chapter. Now I know that Mark just went through the book of James, and hopefully you were here for that series. It's a good one to go through the book. But in the third chapter, James writes that a little bit differently. The first 12 verses deal with taming the tongue. And then those last 6 verses in the chapter, they deal with wisdom. And we're going to look at that today. I'm going to be jumping around through quite a bit of scripture. So feel free to jot some of those references down, and you can look them up and meditate on those later in the week. Starting in Proverbs 16:16, it says, "How much better is it to get wisdom than gold, to get insight rather than silver?" Now we hear that, but I think it's really hard for us to believe or to really identify with that, because we dream about what would it be like to get this huge windfall of money, to win some great cash prize. What would you do with it? What would you buy? Would you travel? Would you keep your job? Would you quit your job and do whatever you wanted? And we dream about that kind of stuff. And I think rarely, if ever, we sit around and dream, what would it look like if I was more wise? Proverbs is one of my favorite books. It speaks to your soul. It cuts to the quick on spiritual issues. And it's just so powerful. It's part of the wisdom literature in the Bible. And with good reason. The wisest man who ever lived wrote it. You know the story of Solomon. He follows King David, his dad. And it is big shoes to fill. Because David has probably the coolest name that's ever been given to anybody. And God refers to him as a man after God's own heart. That's pretty big shoes to fill. And Solomon gets something else that we dream about. What would you wish for? Solomon gets that. God says, "I'm going to grant you a wish." We stand up here all the time and tell you, God's not a genie, don't do that. But for this one time, God did. He said, "I'm going to give you the desire of your heart. What do you want?" And Solomon could have asked for money. He could ask for power, for prestige, maybe even just for peace in his time while he ruled the nation. But instead, he said, "God, please grant me wisdom. Wisdom so that I can rule well over the people that you've entrusted me with." And God says, "I like that answer. And because you chose that answer, I'm going to give you all the rest of the stuff too. I'm going to give you the wealth and the power and the prestige and even the peace in the area." And so Solomon ruled very well because he was connected to God's wisdom for a while. And then he started to see, what else does the world have to offer? So Solomon was actually big into science, trying to figure out how things work and what does things. And so he spent time and effort looking at that, and he just didn't feel fulfilled. So Solomon went to the party scene, and he was all about drinking and having a good time and throwing lavish parties like we've never seen. That didn't quite do it. So then Solomon decided that he would try and fill that void with the flesh. And he had 300 wives, 700 concubines. And at the end of his life, he said, "Vanity, vanity, all of it's vanity." He said, "It's like chasing after the wind. There's no way you could catch it. And even if somehow you were able to, you open it up and it's just empty." So maybe it's not Solomon who you think of. But who would you think of when I say, think of somebody who's wise? Is it a professor or a teacher that you had? Is it a spiritual leader, the Dalai Lama or Confucius and some of their sayings? Maybe it's just grandparents and life advice that they gave you, parenting advice that they passed down. Maybe it's the group of old guys sitting at the local diner in Mount Washington off Bardstown Road, old Bardstown Road. There's a little diner, and every once in a while I'll eat there. Over one of the tables where all the regulars sit, there's actually a plaque that says, "The Table of Knowledge." And I don't know if they outgrew that or whatever, but the table just to the right of them has a plaque that says, "Table of Slightly Less Knowledge." I don't know who it is that you think of when you think of a wise person, but chances are it's probably an older person. We equate wisdom with people who've lived a while, gathered, accumulated wisdom in their life. But that doesn't have to be the way that it is. If someone's following the proper teachings in their life, then they can be living in wisdom. I mean, that's the reason we train our kids, right? That's the reason we teach them, to impart our wisdom to them. I love the book of James, because just like Proverbs, and James doesn't pull anything back. He's direct, quick to the heart of spiritual matters. It's often been referred to as the Proverbs of the New Testament. So, chapter 3, starting in verse 13. "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in humility. That comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy, selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, and then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness." So very plainly, James sets out and he tells us there are two kinds of wisdom. There's godly wisdom, and then there's earthly wisdom. I want to look at earthly wisdom first. What is earthly wisdom? What is the wisdom of our age? Well, I think that's what the earth tries to speak to you. What society tries to say, that's important. I think the wisdom of our age is very sensual. I think it's very self-gratifying, self-centered. Proverbs 14:12 says, "There is a way that appears to be right, but in the end, it leads to death." I mean, we are constantly bombarded with sexual images. And if it feels good, do it mentality. With TV and social media. And parents, you need to guard your kids against this. Set time limits. Turn off screens, because this idea, it's seeping into our kids. What's more is we should practice this ourselves, because it damages us too. We're not above it. There's not an age limit to where sin affects you. Romans 12:2 says, "Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will." It's very easy for us to get caught up in the "everybody's doing it" mentality. Or, "I've got to look out for number one. I don't have time for others." I've heard this one: "It's my guilty pleasure." That means I know it's wrong. I know it's not God-honoring, but I want to do it anyway. It was my guilty pleasure. These things damage our relationship with God. Verses 14 and 15 of James again. But if you harbor bitter envy, selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but it is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. It's such strong language, and it's easy to think, calm down, James. It's not that bad. It's just a little bit of sin that I allow in. It's just a little bit of worldly wisdom. But here's the thing. If we only think about us and what we like and ways that we can get ahead, then we lose our focus as Christians. And we are no longer following Christ, but rather our own desires. Romans 6:21 says, "What benefit did you reap at the time from the things that you are now ashamed of? Those things result in death." And so what that's talking about, and what it's saying to us is, you were lost in sin. And then you came into the saving relationship with Jesus. And you look back at that time. And you know I'm forgiven of that, but man, that's in my past. I wish I didn't do that. I wish I wasn't allowing that sin to be so prevalent in my life. And so we're ashamed of it. And we enter this relationship with Christ. And then we start allowing little bits of that back in our life. And when we do that, we wonder, what in the world's going on? I find myself sinning like I was, just like I was before I was in this relationship with Christ. Why is that? It's because we let sin creep back into our life. We let the worldly wisdom, the self-focus, the I wants, creep back into our life. We don't put God in His place of first and foremost. You look around and it's easy to see the earth's wisdom. The 16th verse of James, "For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and every evil practice." Our world is a hostile one. And I think it's because we become so self-focused, so self-pleasing. We look only to our feelings. And they change all the time. One of the saddest and most clear examples of this can be seen on some of the college campuses in this country. 1,300 Oberlin students signed a petition to eliminate a grade lower than C because they didn't want people to feel less than average. They didn't like that it felt bad that they didn't do their work, so let's just get rid of that bad feeling. Let's just get rid of the lower grades. College campuses all over are creating safe spaces for students who are emotionally unstable, feel emotionally vulnerable. And what's in those places, you ask? I'm glad you did. Let me tell you. Cookies, coloring books, bubbles, Play-Doh. They're playing calming music. There's pillows and blankets there. And in some of them, they even have videos of puppies playing on a loop. Your preschoolers are now college ready. We have become so focused on self and our wants that we've begun to break from reality. And we're teaching it to our children. In John, the 8th chapter, 44 and 45, "You belong to your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding on to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies. Yet because I tell the truth, you do not believe me." That's Jesus speaking to the Pharisees. And he doesn't hold back. And I'm sure he shares those truths in a way that they didn't like to hear. And now I'm not suggesting that we go around and tell people that they're children of the devil. But in this time, we are so concerned about feelings that we're scared to speak the truth to a world that is in desperate need of it. And they're so confused because everyone has their own truth that they don't even know real truth when they hear it. And they can't take hold of the wisdom because it's foolishness to the world. In this world, putting others first doesn't make sense. In this world, not chasing after money, but making sure that you're a good person. There are two kinds of wisdom. That's the worldly wisdom. The godly wisdom that we're to grab a hold of. Proverbs 4 tells us about it. Verse 7 and 8. It says, "In the beginning of wisdom is this. Get wisdom. Though it cost all you have, get understanding. Cherish her, and she, wisdom, will exalt you. Embrace her, and she will honor you." Jesus tells a story about a man who was out working a field. He was plowing it up. And as he was going along, his plow hit something. And thinking it was probably just a rock, he bent down and he got to looking at it more, and it wasn't just a rock. And so he dusted it off, moved stuff, and found this chest that had been buried. And so he opens it, and to his delight, there's gold. Rubies, jewels. And he looks around and he sees nobody else is there. So he closes the lid, covers it back up, and he immediately goes home and he sells everything he had, everything he was used to, everything that he owned, so that he could buy this field, so that he could have the treasure that was important to him. And I think it's that kind of importance, that kind of desperation that we need to search for God's wisdom with. That's what he's saying. That's what Proverbs tells us. Get wisdom. It might cost all that you have. Get it. Cherish it. It will exalt you and honor you. Just a few chapters over in Proverbs, in the 8th chapter, it says, "Choose my instruction instead of silver, knowledge rather than choice gold." I was studying for this, looking over that, and so I looked up a video. There is a process to purify silver. You see, when you pull it out of its natural state, it's impure. It's flawed. It has to be dug out of the ground, and for it to be truly precious, it has to be changed. And we're like that silver. We need the blood of Jesus to purify us. And we need His Word to shape us into who we need to be precious. And we can't shape ourselves. We can't shape ourselves any more than we can save ourselves. We must put our foundation in God's wisdom, in His truth, in His Word. Jesus tells of a story of two guys. And one of them goes and wants to build a house, and so he digs his foundation beachside. It's in the sand. It's pretty easy to do. His foundation's set pretty quick. He starts building the house. It's a beautiful house. His family and him move in. It's great. And then there's a guy he tells about who goes to build his house, and he struggles through it. He digs down and hits rock, and he powers through it and gets through, finally lays the foundation. Cost him more money, cost him time, but he finishes his house. It's beautiful. His family moves in. And both of them have nice places until a big storm comes. And the storm comes, and the rain starts just letting loose and pouring down, and it starts to raise the water level, and the foundation begins to crack and crumble. And the wind blows against the house and it crashes down. And it takes the man and his family with it. But this house, when that same storm hit, the rain came down and the flood waters pounded against it and the wind crashed. And that house wasn't moved. It was fine. Because its foundation was firm. That's how it is with our lives. If we have only worldly wisdom, any storm that comes along blows us and tosses us around. And it threatens to destroy our foundation. But when you have your foundation built on God, you can weather those storms. Sometimes wisdom is understanding that we don't know everything. And it's trusting that God has a better vantage point than we do. Wisdom is trusting God even when life is messy and difficult and when you feel like you can't continue. Wisdom is obedience in frustrating and difficult situations. I think it's interesting that James puts this nugget of truth about wisdom after the section where he talks about taming the tongue, getting control of what you say. Controlling your speech before you live the blessed life that we truly desire. And I think this idea is that wisdom is more than just knowing things, but rather it's living those things out. So wisdom is not just knowing what makes a person wise, but it's doing those things, applying those things in your life. The 17th verse, back in the book of James. But the wisdom that comes from earth is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. And peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. I want to take a closer look. Peace-loving. What does that mean? One who loves peace, right? But let's go a little bit deeper. It's when you lay down your right to be mad at another person, to be angry with another person, to be the bigger man. Maybe you feel like someone has caused you harm, said bad things about you, lied about you, hurt you or someone you love. Instead of giving them an eye for an eye, you turn the other cheek. You give up your right to anger. You give up your right to revenge. That's what peace loving is. I don't often watch the news because it's pretty depressing. But one of the stories that I've been seeing come across, it showed a young man. And his brother had been shot by a police officer. And it was a bad shooting. This woman, she went in to her apartment. Well, she went into her parking garage and she got confused as she was going up to her apartment. And she went to the floor above hers. So she walked into her upstairs neighbor's apartment. And a guy was in there. And she ended up shooting him in his house. Well, the brother of the man who was shot, he was on the, he was up there with the judge. He was on the stand. And he said that he didn't hate her, that he forgave her. And then he asked to do something really odd. He asked the judge if he could go and give her a hug. And the judge was a little taken back by it. But she said, yes, that's fine. And so he goes and hugs this woman who shot his brother. And they embrace for quite some time. And he says, I hope that you can find the love of Jesus and forgiveness of Jesus in your life. And the woman said, I don't know where to find that. And then even more so, the judge comes out and gets the Bible and turns to John 3:16 and says, here, start learning about the forgiveness and the love of Jesus here. That's peace loving. That's giving up your right to be angry at somebody and instead putting the grace of Jesus in there. We're to be considerate. Do you ever watch people? I know for some that's like a pastime that people do. They just sit and watch. I see some smiles. That's probably some vacation stuff that you guys do too. Just sit and watch people. But how about the people that are in your life? Do you actively look at them? Do you see where they are in life? Do you understand what they're going through? Ephesians 4:29 says, let no unwholesome talk come from your lips, but only what is beneficial for building others up according to their needs. You can't just build them up off of what you have in your life. You've got to be paying attention to them to build them up according to what they need. It's putting others first. We're to be full of mercy and good fruit. I think this is when you look out for people who can't look out for themselves. You help people without any possibility of a reward or payback. And the fruit should be evident in our lives. You should have this fruit in your life. As far as faith is concerned, if you're not moving forward, you're dying. Your faith can't stay stagnant. It can't stay in the same place. You can't get to a point and go, I've made it, I'm good. Faith is always in motion. And it's either forward or it's backsliding. If you can't remember the last time that you tried to speak into somebody's life, if you can't remember the last time that you inquired, hey, how are you doing? Can I pray for you about something? If you can't remember that, your faith is backsliding because it can't be focused. That's worldly wisdom if it's just focused on me. It's got to be focused on others. We're to be impartial and sincere. I think we all have a tendency to play favorites. We're all wired differently. And so when we find someone who is wired closely to how we are, it's easy. We can talk to them. We're friends with them. But there are those people who are wired differently enough from you, you just don't like them. They get on your nerves. They're hard to get along with. And being impartial demands that we help them, that we speak into their life as well, not just the ones that it's easy for us to do. Verse 18, peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. I want you to understand, if you do these things, if you are peace-loving, considerate, full of mercy and good fruit, if you're impartial and sincere with others, you are a peacemaker. If you do these things, that's who you are. And if you do that, you will reap a harvest of people caring about you, of you being able to speak with impact into people's lives, of you knowing and feeling that you've done good, and knowing that that pleases God. Sometimes these changes are just too difficult, so we hear what we should do. And we think, I'm good. It's good enough. I know right from wrong. I just sit here on Sunday and listen to a sermon about godly wisdom and earthly wisdom, and I know the difference. I understand it. I'm good. James, back in chapter 1, says this, do not merely listen to the word and deceive yourselves. Do what it says. I had a college professor who would always say, without application, there is no lesson. Which means if you don't do the stuff that we just talked about in your life, you didn't really learn the lesson. Wisdom is applied knowledge. It's knowledge in action. Just like your faith, it can't stand still. It has to be moving. This is a simple concept, but it's not easy. Many times we need help from God just to do that, just to apply it in our life. And we have to yield to Him. I'm sure you have times in life, I know I do, where I'm kind of doing worldly wisdom, right? I'm doing my own thing. And I'll come upon this God-focused, God-wisdom moment. And there's sometimes I'm like, but God, I'm busy doing my thing. I don't want to stop and give way to your thing because I'm pretty focused on what I'm doing. If you cannot yield, you cannot be changed. As I close today, it is my prayer that you will be wise. Be wise in limiting the world's impact. Turn off the TV a little bit more. Fill it and replace it with God's wisdom. And when you have that random person pop into your mind this week, don't just keep going. Yield to God and see what you can do to impact that person's life according to their needs. The praise team is going to come and they're going to sing a song of a decision. And it's my hope that we can all commit to wisdom. Let's be more wise in our lives. But if you have not ever made the decision to make Jesus the Lord of your life, to come underneath His wisdom and into a saving relationship, I invite you to do that today.